They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WEBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax coming to you from a cold and snowy Fairfax, Virginia, but it's not really warm in the studio. It never is. But you know what? It's going to be great on this show because today we are talking to Neil Brooks, who's got a story to tell us. And Neil has been getting the brunt of everything stupid and bad that we seem to be doing in this country. One of the things that we're doing that's not very smart in this country is we are building things right on top of each other because somebody seems to think that there's a problem with space in the world, and that's just not quite true. So, Neil, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me on your show.
You bought a brand new house. That's one of those houses that was built according to this new mania that we have in this country, which is that we don't have room. We're running out of land. So we've got to pile people one on top of the other. There's no elbow room. There's no breathing room. And there's no quality of life, right?
That's exactly right. When I was a kid, we used to always talk about going next door to borrow a cup of sugar from the neighbor. But the house I bought, all you'd have to do is reach out and you could grab that cup of sugar off the neighbor's counter.
I used to kid around and say all you'd have to do is lean out the window and kiss your neighbor goodnight.
Yeah, it's actually true. I think on the rare quiet moments that we had, you could hear the other people breathing and you could easily hear what they were watching on TV.
You know, there's something wrong with that. There's something desperately wrong with that because you're not in a big, huge city like New York or Chicago.
Yeah, no, Northern Colorado, it's the kind of classic town that you look at it on the map and it sprang from Old Town, as so many did, and it grew up a couple miles in every direction, but there's a whole lot of rural and agriculture and just a whole lot of land. So I never understood the wisdom of piling people right on top of people. Some of the city fathers said we're trying to increase densities to encourage mass transit. And, you know, there were some other kind of pseudo-practical reasons, but I think what it tends to do is it forces people to get along better than people historically have gotten along. You know, there just is no space. There's no room to be, and the actions of one always affect everybody else. And if the one isn't reasonable, everybody else pays the price.
So how's that working out? I mean, obviously not very well.
Yeah, I don't live there anymore. We bought a house in early 2009. When we bought it, it was just dirt, so we weren't able to see how the floor plan would fit on the lot. And once the house was under construction, we realized that our house extended almost all the way to the back lot line. So there was about 5 feet of backyard. And the next-door neighbor had a smaller floor plan, and they had a true backyard. But what it meant was their backyard butted right up against our house, and specifically our master bedroom. So when their young cattle dog mix dogs would bark, which they did early in the morning, which they did late at night, and which they did all day long, there was nowhere in our house where you could escape the noise. There was nothing you could do, no amount of noise you could create that would drown it out, no number of doors you could close and escape it. You couldn't be in the basement and not have those barks tear through our house. So it took away the peace It took away my ability to sleep, and because I was already medically disabled and a chronic pain patient, it slowly deteriorated my health. So the circumstances, it kind of created the perfect storm. It was house on top of house. It was intrusive noise to a ludicrous degree. And then what we found out was it was a dysfunctional community of hurt people who were kind of predisposed to hurt other people.
Well, I've been doing this for, 28 years now, and I have yet to find a perfect association where things work, where the association is there for the owners, because they're not. The owners are just there. They provide the financing. They provide the punching bags. They provide the people to be isolated. There's no way you can make these things work.
I listened to your show last week with Professor Gary Solomon, the author of the HOA syndrome and a couple of books. And first, I thought it was a truly excellent interview. And I was grateful to have heard his wisdom on the subject. And he's a whole lot smarter in the psychology of these HOAs than I'll ever be. But everything he said not only resonated deeply with me, but it was all too familiar with me. There's something in the psychology of giving a small group of people what they feel is kind of unlimited power that makes even good people become kind of bad, and that makes people who are already pretty broken become really evil. And I know that what Gary Solomon talks a lot about is a pathological tendency to over-enforce rules in some of these HOAs. But my experience was actually kind of the opposite. As a disabled person who simply needed one covenant reasonably enforced, the covenant about nuisance dogs or excessive noise, I realized that what they don't do is often at least as damaging as what they do do. But it's still the same kind of broken, dysfunctional person in charge.
Neil, I was thinking earlier when I was thinking about the interview and talking to you today, a lot of municipal jurisdictions have noise ordinances. As much as possible, I like to see HOAs get the hell out of enforcing things, because there are no limits to what they can do. And they are abusive. But if you have a municipality that says, all right, you've got to be quiet, and you cannot have excessive noise after a certain hour so that people can sleep, they tend to enforce that. Is there in Fort Collins no municipal noise ordinance that you know of?
Well, it's a little bit like the problem with so many of these HOAs. There were rules in the HOA. The HOA Board of Directors chose not to enforce them. There were rules in the county, and Animal Control had jurisdiction over barking in the county, but Animal Control refused to act and enforce their own rules. And running out of options for trying to get help, I looked to the police and I looked to the city ordinances, and there were very clear decibel, sound level, hour of day noise ordinances that the city also chose not to enforce. There's a catch-22 that I didn't know about at the time, but it happens all over the country, where if the problem is barking dogs, Animal Control says, we're not going to act. Then you call the police, and the police says, well, we only act on barking dog complaints if we get a referral from Animal Control. So you kind of get one party pointing at the other party, neither one is acting, and meanwhile, your life is falling apart. So nobody was willing to enforce their rules, despite the fact that on countless occasions I said, I'm medically disabled, I'm in chronic pain, there's no way to rest in my house, and my health is falling apart.
So those, your tax dollars at work, right?
Yeah, I'd like to believe they were doing better and more important things, but I just don't think that's the case.
I don't think it is either. But you also contacted your neighbors, and you explained the situation to them and invited them over to your house to talk about it. And they came, and things improved slightly, and you even sent them a basket of fruit thanking them for their understanding.
Well, they didn't come. I mean, one of the really, really significant themes throughout my 3.5-year ordeal in this neighborhood was, no matter how many times I said, come by, have a snack, have a glass of wine, have a beer, let's talk about what's going on, and let me show you the unfortunate circumstance of neighbor on top of neighbor and backyard on top of bedroom. Nobody did come. Nobody
oh, the neighbors did didn't come?
They didn't come. Yeah. I honestly can't be sure if the 7 or 8 days of relative quiet were just a coincidence. Maybe the neighbors were out of town and their dogs were kenneled, but whatever the case, 7 or 8 or 9 days were a lot better, and I was hugely grateful because I thought, oh, this is great. They're helping out. They're doing something about it. But after that 7 or 8 or 9 days, the early and late and all-day barking just started up again.
So why were the dogs barking?
You know, partway through all of this, I wound up hiring what's called an animal behavior expert. Colorado State University is in Fort Collins. They have a really well-regarded veterinary school, and they referred me to a PhD in animal behavior. And she came by, and she looked at the pictures so she could identify the breed of dogs, and she looked at the geography, and she asked me 1,000 questions, and she said, this is classic canine separation anxiety disorder. These are dogs that require a lot of attention, a lot of stimulation, a lot of exercise, a lot of activity, or they can go nuts. And the way they try to relieve that anxiety of going nuts is by barking. And because this breed of dogs was a mix with cattle dogs, they had this high-pitched, really upset, really just disturbing, because you knew they were suffering, yelp of a bark. And they would just bark in this monotone, second after second after second, hour after hour after hour. But because it was separation anxiety, the neighbors never heard it because it happened while they were gone. So they would come home and the dogs would stop barking and they would think, Neil, you're nuts. We never hear it.
So what you're saying is the dogs were lonely.
The dogs were lonely. The dogs were bored.
And so while they were gone, they barked.
And they were gone a lot. The husband is a college professor and was an amateur bicycle racer. So when he wasn't working, he was riding. And the wife was a professional cycle racer, so she was all over the map racing. And they were gone a lot. And quite often, the dogs were left alone all day with maybe somebody paid to come check on them at lunch. So in the best of times, the dogs might bark from 6 in the morning till noon and again from 1 in the afternoon until 5. And as I said, it just echoed throughout my house.
Did you ever go over and play with the dogs? Did you bring them over into your 5-foot yard? if the idea was, you know, they were lonely, would that have helped?
I used to visit them.
Did you?
A lot, because obviously I could walk out my door and walk 6 steps and there would be the dogs, and I would pet them and calm them. But they were so anxious and so hurting by being left alone that they would try to get over the fence and scratch, and I just felt horribly. I actually encountered the neighbor on the other side of the dog owner's house several times when she and I were both trying to calm the dogs. I would bring them treats, I would bring them snacks, I would pet them, and all of that would help until I went back inside.
So
it actually got to the point where giving snacks to the neighbor's dogs made my paranoid dog-owning neighbors think I was trying to poison them, and they had their attorney tell me to stop giving snacks to the dogs.
Oh, these are the owners of these dogs.
These are the owners of these dogs.
And, you know, if you have pets, you have a responsibility, I think, and that doesn't sound like they were very responsible pet owners. But they weren't very responsible neighbors either, because they didn't seem to care that they were affecting your health and your quality of life adversely.
I'll stop you if you say something that I think is wrong. What really wound up happening is, after about the third time that I had to reach out to these neighbors, I said, I don't think your dogs are okay. I think they're anxious, or they're scared, or they're lonely, or they're bored, or they're sick. And my neighbors got tremendously defensive when they heard that, and that changed the tone of our interactions, and it put them on the defensive. Now, about 10 months after I said that, one of these two sister dogs at age 3 died from an autoimmune disease. And while I can't prove it, I'm quite certain that either the anxiety that drove this dog to bark endlessly killed it, or the dog was barking because it didn't feel well. And these owners who were neglecting the basic welfare of their dogs never took a moment to say, I wonder if this guy's right. I wonder if maybe he's telling the truth. So I lost my health. I lost my house. I lost my life savings. I lost my marriage. And they lost a dog. Everybody lost, and the solution was really quite simple.
You did turn to the HOA. You thought that maybe the association would somehow step in and do something.
I did. The four or five active steps I took after contacting the dog owners, I took slowly. I didn't want it to seem like, you know, I was overbearing or impatient. So I would try something, and if it would fail, I would wait a few weeks or a month, and then I would contact animal control, and then it was a few weeks or a month before I contacted the police. It was quite a few months before I reached out to the HOA, because we were probably either the last or next to last to move into this neighborhood of just 40-something houses. And it was a tight-knit community, which was part of the appeal. But I realized these people don't know me, and I really don't want to stir up any more trouble in the neighborhood than is necessary. So I tried to work it out every other civil, reasonable, neighborly way. When I reached out to the property manager said she would help. But then the board of directors, much to Professor Gary Solomon's point, called off the property manager and said, don't help him, don't do anything, don't stop the barking, let us handle this. So the property manager wrote back to me and said, I'm sorry, they don't want me working on this, you'll have to contact the board. And I said, well, how do I get in contact with the board? Could you give me a list of their names? And she said, I can give you one name. And she gave me the name of the vice president of the board of directors. And that's when things went from not working well to outright ugly, because this very flawed, very broken person decided to get extremely personal. And rather than ever talk to me, spent all of his time talking to neighbors and vendors and the home builder about me to try to develop this kind of personal case for why he didn't like me and he did like the dog owners. So nobody was going to help me, and I'm an awful person, and I'm persona non grata in this neighborhood, and I should just leave everybody the heck alone, and we're not going to help you.
That sounds so typical of an association. You have one person who's raising an issue. Not necessarily, I didn't say a troublemaker, but you were seen as a troublemaker because you were not accepting the status quo. And the first thing they do is they isolate you. They isolate you by telling lies. They isolate you by spreading rumors. They isolate you by pointing fingers. And your neighbors are terrified of saying, hey, wait a minute, you got to stop this nonsense. Because they don't want to be targeted by the association. So it's a very sick establishment. It's a very sick concept. It's maybe it was never intended to be that way, but, you know, no matter where you look, Neil, it's just, instead of coming together as neighbors and acting like a community, which they are not, I object to the fact that they're called communities because there's nothing communal about them. They tend to just make life miserable for one or two or three people.
I didn't realize, first of all, I was trying to figure out, okay, I have a barking dog neighbor, what do you do? And I went to the internet and found out that there is a Professor Gary Solomon of the barking dogs world. He's a guy named Craig Mixon, and he has a wonderful site called barkingdogs.net. And when I started looking to find out what do you do in this circumstance, it was a little bit discouraging because essentially he said there's only a couple kinds of people that have barking dogs, and rarely are they well-meaning, kind people who didn't know. And when you bring it to their attention, they're grateful that you brought it to their attention, and they address the problem.
Oh, really?
More often than not, you get defensive people. So I learned about this sort of problem that's inherent in people that own dogs that aren't taken care of. I didn't know anything about this dynamic in HOAs that Professor Solomon so accurately describes and that you so rightly tell about. It blindsided me. You know, I had grown up in a kind of standard suburban environment with kind of educated, decent people. I've been a business person my whole life. I'm used to dealing civilly with reasonable people, and you can work things out in kind of a civilized fashion. But it blindsided me when the villagers came around with their torches and pitchforks. And you're exactly right. They not only isolated and marginalized me, but they either turned the remaining 40 houses against me,
yeah.
or you're right that they put so much fear into
yeah.
those other homeowners
yeah.
that
oh, yeah.
they hid in their own basements for fear that the torches would come their way next.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was actually, I mean, I've never really had a problem with my HOA, but when I ran for the board, they didn't want me on the board, so they went around spreading rumors about me and basically lies. So when I went getting proxies for the board, I had someone chase me down with a call it a pitchfork. It was probably more a rake. But he says, "Get away from me. You're trying to devalue property values." And they went tearing down the sidewalk with this thing after me, and he was going to beat me up.
So this little metaphor that I've been using about the pitchforks and the torches,
true.
It's not always just a metaphor.
No. It's very, very true. It's very true. They do isolate you. They do try to put you in a box on your own. They do try to, yeah, it's an imbalance. It's an imbalance. There's nothing functional. There's nothing, you know, people keep trying to fix HOAs. You can't do it. There's no way anybody is going to fix this. It's a bad deal all the way around.
You know, years and years ago, I attended an abnormal psychology class with my then-girlfriend, later wife, and I remember the professor was going on and on about dysfunctional families. And a student raised his hand and said, "We hear all about dysfunctional families. Can you talk to us about what a functional family looks like?" And the professor said, "When I come across one, I'll let you know."
Yeah.
I guess I never thought, you know, I like to tell the story that when my wife and I sat to sign closing documents for our house, they asked if I had read the, you know, 22-page bylaws for the CC&Rs for the Homeowners Association. And I said, "Whatever the rules are, I agree to abide by them because I'm comfortable with the notion that you'll apply them equally against all the homeowners, too." I guess
Whoa,
I didn't feel like...
Oh, boy, was that a silly thing to say.
Yeah. Yeah. Counted on adults to act like adults. I didn't count on the notion that... One of the words that I didn't hear Professor Solomon use, but I would love to hear his feedback, but I heard about what they call tribalism, the concept of us versus them.
Mm-hmm.
And I later, much later, found out how quickly communities become tribal.
Yeah.
And the party lines get drawn. You're either with us or against
yeah.
us. And I think, I'm neither. I just live here.
Yeah. Yeah. I get very frustrated. And Gary and I talked a little bit about using proper terminology. And I've used, and I've done a show with Bill Davis on using proper terminology. And we have allowed the HOA industry to come up with all the words we use to describe it. Community has a sense of belonging. It has a gives you the warm and fuzzies, right? You want to move into a nice community.
Absolutely.
There's nothing communal about them. We've got to stop using the word community. We've got to call them developments. You know, neighborhoods, whatever you want to call them, but they are not communities.
Doesn't Professor Solomon lean on the term ghetto?
He uses ghetto. He also uses he uses a number of different terms to describe it. Yes.
I always have said that 10 years ago, if I came across an article like Professor Solomon's article called HOA Syndrome, I would have thought, well, this guy's coming way out of left field. This guy had a bad experience, and, you know, he represents a tiny fraction.
No.
I'm such a convert. I'm such a convert.
No.
He talks about the Milgram experiment and the Stanford prison experiment and bystander syndrome and how good people can do horrible things if basically they're allowed to, and how good people will stand idly by and watch. And really, 10 years ago, I would have thought this is the stuff of Hollywood movies, but it isn't real. As a person who simply said, hey, I have all kinds of complicated medical issues, I need my rest, and you're hurting me, can I ask you just to do one simple thing? It's unbelievable to watch how fast the pitchforks came out of the shed and the torches got lit. I never would have believed it.
So take us forward. You bought this house. You moved to Fort Collins because you'd been there on vacation and you liked it.
That's exactly right.
And so you decided you wanted to live there, and you found this house. You found
That's exactly
this
right.
development, and you had a house built.
And we were, just as you said, it wasn't just the term community, but we went through the little cul-de-sac community, I don't know, 10 times, and had the opportunity to talk to three or four of the residents. And it sounded like Mayberry. It sounded like what I lovingly called the womb, where good people took care of each other, and the kids played together. And literally, I found out that if a mother was expecting, when she delivered in that neighborhood, the neighbors took turns pitching in and making dinner and bringing over dinner. And in the first 2 weeks that we got there, I made dinner and brought dinner to one of the neighbors who had just delivered a child. And I thought, this is so great. This is community. You're exactly right. It was seductive. But over the course of 18 or 19 months, my eyes were chemically burned in 2004, and I developed what they call neuropathic corneal pain. It's like having a really bad sunburn, but it's in your eyes. And the only thing they found that they could do to manage it was to let me wear these shell contact lenses that are like little cereal bowls, and you fill them with saline, and you pry your eyelids open, and you plop these lenses in, and they would protect my eyes. But you can only wear them during the day. So I would take them out at night, and the pain in my eyes would become excruciating, and I just could sleep. That's all I could do. But day after day and week after week and month after month of not sleeping started tearing my health apart. And again, looking at Professor Gary Solomon's HOA syndrome, he describes it exactly how it played out. You become fearful. You become chronically exhausted. You are on edge. You are desperate for sleep. And despite the severity of what was going on with me medically, I stayed civil and reasonable, and I tried to pursue every reasonable path, asking civilly, can you help me? This is really tearing me up. None of it worked. I mean, I've described most of the steps and how there was backlash from the steps, and feeling like we were out of options, we hired a lawyer and said, I don't want to sue, but could you write a letter to the neighbors that just says my client is medically disabled, the barking's gone on nonstop for months and months and months, you need to stop it. And again, the dog-owning neighbors dug their heels in, and their attorney threatened to sue me for harassment. So here I am, sick, running back and forth to doctors on just about every kind of antiviral antibiotic known to man. And now I'm being threatened with a lawsuit because I've said, could you please quiet the barking dogs? The lawsuit was the only thing that stopped the neighbors from being kind of awful people. It put a gag on the neighbors, who by that time were giving us the middle finger and horrible looks and turning their backs and doing everything villagers with pitchforks and torches do. Once the lawsuit got filed, that stopped for a while. But we wound up with our case in front of a judge whose daughter was the property manager for HOAs.
Oh, boy. Okay.
And her brother-in-law, whose wife's husband, was a builder of residential communities that were covenant-controlled communities. I didn't know that. And I give a little more detail on the website that I think you're going to link to on your promo page.
Yeah.
But despite the fact that all the lawyers we talked to said this case will make it to trial, the judge never let us get our day in court. He said there's no issues here, and he threw out the case. And as soon as he threw out the case, that emboldened the dysfunctional, broken people of our neighborhood to start terrorizing me again with their vehicles, with their voices, with their profanity. They were trying to run me off the road. I filed 4 or 5 police reports and asked the police for help. And again, the police wouldn't help.
You know, you're not the only person who've told me that people have tried to run them off the road. That seems to be, regardless of what part of the country you live in, if you live in one of these gulags, then if you've been targeted and you've been isolated and you are in the crosshairs of the dysfunctional HOA, somebody is going to either try to run you down when you're on foot or try to run you down by car. I've even had somebody call me up and say that her foot was broken because the manager intentionally ran over her foot.
Oh my God.
With her car. You know, it's just horrible. It really and truly is horrible. I've been doing this for a long time. I hear these stories. People will call me up and say, you know, this is what happened to me. It's a little hard to believe. But when you hear it over and over and over again from different people in different states, in different gulags, in different whatever, then you realize that there's a thread there. It's hard to put it aside. It's hard to not believe it.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And you know, the notion, maybe part of the notion of these covenant-controlled communities, maybe in the early days, was about maintaining property values by having... Well, I was going to give the benefit of the doubt for the moment.
No.
But whatever its original intent was, it got corrupt. It became high school and sort of the popular kids and the unpopular kids. But the quote-unquote popular kids, they got all the power. And they're using it in really, really sinister ways. And I absolutely agree with you. If somebody had told me my story 10 years ago, I would have ignored them. I would have said there's just no way it could have happened as you describe it until I lived it myself.
Let's put something to rest right now. I talked to Byron Hankey, who's considered to be the grandfather, the person who got us these mass-produced HOAs. They were never, ever, ever, ever designed with the intention of doing anything whatsoever for the homeowner.
What was the original intent?
The original intent was to provide municipal governments with tax-free money because your property taxes initially were devised to provide you with certain things: streets, sidewalks, street lights, trash pickup, snow removal if you live someplace where you need it, all of the typical services. When the economy boomed and they built roads and more people had cars and they wanted to get out of the urban areas, they were tired of living a cramped life, they wanted to move out to the suburbs. And the suburbs were booming. They were growing really fast. And local municipal government said, all right, you can build on grid system because they're easier to maintain. They're cheaper to maintain. Byron Hankey was a planner, and he did not like the grid system. He thought it was kind of ugly. He wanted a prettier, curvy linear streets. He wanted, cul-de-sacs. He convinced everyone that they were a lot safer because now you wouldn't have thieves and people going through because they could get trapped in there. There was no way of getting out if they ended up on a cul-de-sac or a dead end someplace. And so it was a much prettier streetscape. The municipal government said, we can't afford that. It's much more expensive to get trash trucks going down, removing snow, building streets, and all of that. It's just not going to happen. So he said, well, what if we have the homeowners pay for it separately? And the municipality said, we need our tax dollars. He said, you get your tax dollars. You get every penny that you're getting now. It's just that the homeowners are going to pay for all of that separately.
So it's the classic double dip.
And when the homeowners balked at that, they said, well, why would we do that? They said, because it'll protect your property values.
So the lie... needed a sales pitch behind it.
Right. So the lie was born there. When people started accepting it and buying into these things, municipal governments decided, hey, this isn't so bad. We don't have to raise taxes and have this political stigma on us. You know, nobody wants to raise taxes, right? So they started mandating associations. So for the last several decades, they've been mandating them. And now, of course, we're getting into increased density. So they love it. Because if you take an acre of land, and in the old days, if you could put three or four houses on there, that same acre, now they can cram in 10, 15, 20, 300 houses if they build up. And just think of all the tax dollars going in that they don't have to do anything for.
Yeah, I think the increased density is good for every single person in the equation except the person.
Except the people, except the citizens.
Yeah, I mean, it's easier for the letter carriers to stop at one box that has 150 mail chutes in it than to go door to door, and it's easier for the bus and the pizza guy, but living in it is, I don't want to say it's automatically a nightmare, but you have to do everything in your power to keep it from being a nightmare, because the dysfunctional human element is always at play.
There were stories of people who lived in places like, I keep picking on New York City, but because New York City was one of the most densely populated cities, and everybody lived in high rises, but people used to say that if you lived in New York City, you'd get on the elevator, and you never looked at the neighbor. You didn't want to talk to them. You needed your privacy. You needed your space, and you didn't want to let anyone in on that. So people would get in and they'd look at their shoes, they'd look at their wall, they'd look at their watch, they'd look at their phone, they'd look at everything and anything except the other person in the elevator.
I used to visit New York City a lot. I've seen exactly what you're talking about, and people used to joke about it. But even the locals said exactly what you said. We're stacked in here like sardines. We're in each other's faces all day long. I think one of the sort of compelling, tragic ironies of my story was that I'm a pretty friendly, outgoing guy. And because I tried to be outgoing and friendly, and then to be outside as much as I could because that was medically important to me, people saw me. So I was sort of visible in my own way. And I guess what I didn't know, and I didn't find out until we were in a lawsuit and we got endless piles of documents that the neighborhood had been generating from one neighbor to another, except for me, what I didn't know was that nobody believed there was anything medically wrong with me, because they did see me. They did see me on a bicycle. They did see me drive my car. They did see me go for walks. So the ironies are, because I didn't try to hide in my house and be antisocial, and because I tried to push as hard as I possibly could to do all the things I physically could that I knew were good for me, these people made this group judgment. And again, it's something that Professor Solomon and others talk about, that even if you know the answer is wrong, it's easier to go with the crowd. They made this group judgment, and they never challenged it by doing something as off the wall as talking to me. They made this group judgment that there's nothing wrong with this guy, and if there's nothing wrong with him and he's complaining, he must be a jerk.
He must be faking it, right? He's lying. He's just, yeah. I know, it's so sad, because what we're doing is unraveling the fabric of the country by doing this.
I don't think it's possible for me to agree with you more. I don't even think I could come up with a way to say it that's accurate enough. And when you say that there isn't any fixing of the HOA as a concept, all I can do is sort of smile and think the same thing. I do have to believe. My mother lives in a covenant-controlled community, and while there are some petty, vindictive folk, they are in the minority. And while they are loud and they are vocal, they do get shouted down. Now, her community is, my mother bought when it was fairly cheap, but they're expensive homes now. So you're getting professional, reasonable people in there. And they shout down these, what Gary Solomon calls capos, these broken people who who need to inflict the harm of their lives on everybody around them. So the model I had for how HOAs work was my mother's community. And while there's conflict, the good guys tend to win. I don't know how often that happens, but what I can tell you, and again, Professor Solomon talked about this, the children of people who grow up in these covenant-controlled communities are very unlikely to want to live in them themselves. I am steadfastly unwilling to live in another covenant-controlled community because more than just double-dipping where the municipalities get the money and don't have to provide the services, they also don't have to enforce city or municipal laws because they can kind of push it back to this quasi-government that nobody really elected to police their own neighborhoods. But as much trouble as we might be having with whether or not police are always doing the job right in this country, they're trained and they have oversight. No such thing is true of these boards of directors and HOAs.
I think municipal governments are distancing themselves from their constituents, which is wrong, which is very, very wrong. And a lot of people will sort of take me to task for saying all the things that I say. Let me make it clear, not every single HOA is in trouble. Not every single HOA is having major problems. Every single HOA, however, is subject to the same laws and the same mentality. So as people move out of your mother's neighborhood, more people are going to move in. While she may have people who shout down the idiots, that might not always be the case. The idiots might be in greater numbers. So it's not just because it's not dysfunctional now doesn't mean that it won't be tomorrow or next week or next month. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, a lot like the HOA syndrome that Professor Solomon wrote about, it makes perfect sense. It makes absolute sense. And they are an unaccountable, I think people use the term quasi-governmental body.
Yeah.
When I tried to find out who oversees and regulates Colorado's HOAs, I found the organization, but they literally say on their website, we don't have any teeth. We don't have any powers. We're not an enforcement mechanism. We're just interested in your stories.
They're not. A lot of homeowner advocates are out there lobbying to get some kind of ombudsman in there. When they do get them, they're always disappointed because all they are placebos. They're there so that the legislators can say, but we gave you an ombudsman, go talk to them. And it's, again, your classic three-ring circus. You know, they're just going to bounce you around from pillar to post, and you're never going to get any satisfaction. There's no adult supervision anywhere in these things.
I think the municipalities don't have interest because of the things you talked about before, double-dipping, that there's another layer of kind of local semi-government that can take the burden off of real government agencies. They don't have interest in doing anything real or substantive. So a lot like these policies that you call animal control and they tell you to call the police, you call the police and they tell you to call animal control, they're building in the runaround.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And they're building it in knowing that they're building in the runaround because at first blush, people will think, oh good, they did something. But then when you need that service and you make a phone call, I think most people in this country will understand when you have a computer problem and you call the software people and they tell you to call the hardware people and you call the hardware people and they tell you to call. And the end of the day, they won't talk to each other and your computer still doesn't work.
Yeah.
My runaround with the police and with animal control was the exact same. And they each said, we don't act until the other act. And I said, how do you square this circle? How do you break through the log jam? And the answer was pretty much, please stop calling us.
Yeah, don't bother us. Just pay your taxes. And speaking of paying your taxes, there's another segment, another portion of your story that I find extremely troubling. That is that you went to court and you were under a court-ordered gag order. And you were not allowed to talk about this and what you've been through for 2 years.
Yeah. I think it's important that I'm upfront with people and say that that came about as a result of how the story in my community ended. When the judge threw the case out, so I never got my day in court for the problems with the HOA, that took the manacles off of the neighbors, and the broken neighbors started the little campaign of terror. When the police, when I called the police and I said, I'm medically disabled, I'm in chronic pain, I have an immune dysfunction, and I've been sick and getting sicker since this all started, the police officer literally laughed at me and said that was the most ridiculous thing she had ever heard. So the police told me the same thing that animal control said, which is go away and don't bother us. At which point I realized these people might kill me. I literally can't rule out that they might kill me. So I availed myself of Colorado's very well-supported Second Amendment rights. I bought a handgun, and I started openly carrying it on my property on those rare occasions when I was the only one in sight and I had to go tend to my lawn. Well, some of the neighbors saw that this guy was carrying a gun, and this horribly dysfunctional board member took his camera one day and hid behind his house and his bushes, and using a 400-millimeter telephoto lens, that's 8 power, that's like what you use to go bird watching, he took pictures of me over the course of about 3 minutes, pulling out my garden hose and watering my tree, my poor little tree was dying, while openly carrying a gun. And for one brief moment, instead of looking at the tree, I looked up. And that picture looks pretty damning, except that the rest of the story was, I turned around, I set the hose down, I went back in the house, I put the gun down, I came back out of the house, I turned off the water, I reeled the hose back in, and I went inside. So the pictures show everything up until a man holding a gun and looking forward. But the police department literally told the board of directors guy with the camera, go ahead and delete these other pictures. The police department in Fort Collins, Colorado, told this guy, go ahead and destroy evidence. The district attorney actually told my attorney that. We thought there were more pictures, but the police told this guy to destroy them. The rest of the pictures tell the rest of the tale. The guy turned around and went back inside. Anyway, based on the strength of those pictures, I was arrested. Now, I wasn't arrested by a couple of men in blue knocking on my door. I was called out of my house on a megaphone. They announced my name and my address, and they told me to come out with my hands up. When I did, they knocked me to my knees, and what I saw in front of me was at least 24 police, sheriffs, and SWAT team all pointing guns at me and hiding behind full tactical shields. I saw an armored tank 150 feet to my left, and I saw the purplish, glassy glint of glare off a sniper's rifle across the street. They used an army to take down a man who had never committed a crime in his life, had never hurt anybody, had never threatened anybody, who was abandoned by the police, who was being terrorized by his neighbors, who lost his house, and who simply was willing to defend himself against further harm. They threw me in jail. And what you're talking about with the gag order was the district attorney saying, if you do not agree to our terms, we're going to charge you with a felony that carries a potential penalty of 3 years in prison. And our terms include you cannot speak publicly about what happened in this town or in that neighborhood for 2 years. Now, not coincidentally, 2 years is the amount of time before the statute of limitations for any civil action, like civil rights abuse complaints, expired. So my attorney said they're gagging you for 2 years so you can't speak publicly and file a civil rights case. Gagging me, they had also told me you're not allowed back in your house. So the day that I got arrested, the day that I got thrown in jail, was the last time I ever slept in my own house. I had to leave and never went back.
What happened to your house?
We had to sell it. My wife lived there on her own for a couple weeks, and she said, I hate this place, so let's figure out what we can do. and I called the builder. Now, our house had a couple of construction problems that were sort of serious because they were in concrete and they were in the walls. They were plumbing, they were electrical, and they were air conditioning. And the builder and I had been working closely to try to resolve those problems. And he was a really upstanding guy. And when the builder found out all that was happening, he said, you know, we never resolved your construction problems. It would have cost me too much money to fix them. I'll buy your house back from you. And he did.
So that's how you got out of it.
That's how I got out of it.
Wow. Neil, that's one hell of a story. I'm really concerned about the fact that you've got a court-ordered gag order. It expired last September, but for 2 years you weren't allowed to talk about it. They threatened you with all kinds of things if you did break that gag, right?
They said
you'd get thrown.
We could put you in prison for 3 years.
For what? For carrying a gun?
Yeah, what they charged me with was what they call felony menacing. And I know, because I had to look into this, felony menacing requires that you be aware of a guy hiding behind his house and you intend to sort of put the fear of God into him. What they should have charged me with at the absolute most was something called brandishing, which basically means you were carrying a weapon in a way that you shouldn't have been carrying a weapon. But when the police saw that the pictures were taken from a hiding place where it's just impossible for me to have seen him, and when the police knew that the story was a guy was watering his tree and he went back inside, and when the rest of the story was that the police told the guy with the camera to destroy evidence, there's no way. I mean, first of all, the police saying go ahead and destroy evidence is just corruption. It's flat-out corruption like you read about. But when the district attorney chose to charge me with a felony regardless, knowing all of that, it's a classic case of what they call prosecutorial overreach.
So you're still in Fort Collins, huh?
Well, I can't get my health back, Shu. I'm having heart trouble now, and they're not sure what to do with it. And I was at the Mayo Clinic last spring, and I called my estranged wife and said, can I just come and rest and recover while I try to figure out what to do? But since then, I've developed heart problems, and I'm not quite sure how to move forward with my life from here.
I'm really sorry. I thank you, Neil, for sharing your story, because this is probably one of the worst stories that I've heard in a long time.
Go ahead.
In a very, very long time. You seem to have been the brunt of everything. This increased density, a dysfunctional HOA, neighbors that don't seem to care. I mean, usually dogs bark. Did you ever tell them about the woman who came and watched and listened to the dogs?
Yeah, and of course, this was exactly what Gary Solomon talks about, bystander syndrome. When I asked that other neighbor, as we were working with an attorney, can I count on your support? She turned her back.
So you didn't get any help anywhere?
I didn't get any help anywhere.
I hope you find a way to better health. I hope you find a way to a real community, not one that's forced on people through a set of covenants, through a mandate. And I hope you find some place where you can regain your health and move forward.
Thank you so much, Sue. Thank you for your program, for taking on this cause, and for giving me an opportunity to tell my story.
Well, thank you. You reached out to me, and I was once I read your website. By the way, folks, can you give us your web address? I mean, I will have it in there, but we're going to have people who are listening on the show and not necessarily on my website. So give us the address.
Sure. The website is N like Neil, Beener, B as in boy, E-E-N-E-R, N Beener, .blogspot, blogspot.com.
So nbeener.blogspot.com. Go read his story. There are pictures. you'll see pictures of the dogs and you'll see pictures of the houses and you'll wonder why we have to live on top of each other and cause more problems. But anyway, Neil, thank you so much. Hang in there and all the best to you.
Thank you, Shu.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.